Okay, so for the second session this morning, I just want to wrap up the topic of the first session by recounting one of the case histories of healing in one of the monasteries that I lived in Burma. As you know, I went to Burma back in the mid-80s and ordained as a monk and practiced there, both insight or mindfulness leading to insight and mindfulness leading to concentration and the Brahma Viharas. And this is a pretty well-known meditation center in Burma. And over the course of the many years that it's been open, there have been many cases of what we could call spontaneous healing or miracle healing, or just, well, as a result of intensive practice of mindfulness. And these stories have been compiled into a booklet, and it's just interesting to review them, since that's what we're talking about, is the mind in healing. So we know from our contemporary experience that mindfulness is really useful for dealing with stress and pain and the high blood pressure and all those other things that make life difficult and tense and hypertense. Well, people in Burma also have severe cases of hypertension and stress. And there's one story of this 59-year-old woman who had a 26-year history of hypertension. And it was so bad that she had to check her blood pressure frequently every day. And often she was just incapacitated and experienced considerable physical and mental suffering. She tried both traditional Burmese and Western medical treatments. She got minimal relief, but no cure. She was fearful of going to a retreat center and practicing because of her poor health, and she thought that it would get worse. Now, in Burma, when people go to the meditation center, they call it striving for the Dharma. They go to strive for the Dharma. And because they're nominal Buddhists until they practice, they have an understanding of the Buddhist teachings, and they understand that the insurance of a good future rebirth is to attain the first stage of enlightenment called stream entry by experiencing Nibbana. And their goal in going to the monastery to strive for the Dharma is to reach that first stage, to reach the first, to taste the unconditioned of Nibbana for the first time. So when they go to strive for the Dharma, they know that it is intense, full-on, no distractions, effort for as long as it takes. Usually, I say as long as it takes, they probably wouldn't stay more than 2 months. Some will stay 2 to 3 months. But, you know, many do not reach Nibbana, and some do. But that's the energy with which they go to the monastery. So she had this condition of hypertension and no medical relief, and she was fearful of striving for the Dharma because she thought that her health was not good enough to do that. But eventually she decided to strive for the Dharma, and for the first 4 days nothing special happened. But on the fifth day, her blood pressure was so high that she was unable to lift her head. And her children came to take her home because they thought that she would be hurt herself by continuing to practice. But she thought, I would be much better and it would be nobler for me to die while striving for the Dharma than to go home. And so she continued. And while sitting, her whole body became heavy and sluggish, and she swayed and leaned to one side as if about to fall over. While she continued to note uninterruptedly, as she was instructed, whatever occurred, she was noting whatever occurred, she felt something burst within herself, and her whole body was engulfed by heat, and she was emitting light. Thereafter, her striving and mindfulness was very good, enabling her to sit for long periods of time, up to an hour, 2.5 hours, during which she felt like she was sitting joyfully and comfortable for only a short moment, without any tiredness at all, and her whole body felt light and pain-free. She strove in this way for some number of days to her teacher's satisfaction, which means Nibbana. Upon returning home, there were no signs of hypertension, and she no longer suffered from her formerly swollen face and heavy head, indications of her hypertension, and she's had no indications of hypertension since that time. Hey, well, just go practice until you think you're going to die and keep going. So it is, you know, it is possible, even though fearful of your own medical condition, to practice and strive for awareness or mindfulness, and there can be sometimes dramatic transformations in the mind that condition dramatic healing in the body. So for the next period of time, I want to talk about the body, the material element of this process called me. Because we're talking about the mind and healing, and we're talking about primarily the healing of the body. Of course, we know that the healing of the mind takes place through practice also in the recovery of suppressed emotion and the recovery of suppressed memories, in the training of wholesome response to events in life rather than an unwholesome reaction, and gradually, just through developing awareness, we do heal the mind, we heal our broken hearts and our damaged self-esteem and our sense of self that is has taken a beating in so many ways, and this is the mental healing that occurs as we practice. But today I'm speaking more particularly about the possibility of healing the body, or the development of the mind being a healthy condition for a healthy body. So, on the back of the handout that we just looked at is the Buddha's understanding of the body. Okay. Now, there's a lot on there, but I want to look at just a couple of different pieces of it. On the left-hand side, we see what are called the 28 material elements. And the primary elements are earth, air, fire, and water. This is the These are the elements of the body as experienced directly. Now, we know when we look in a mirror, we see the body. This is an appearance. And when we look in an anatomical map, or if we go to an autopsy or something like that, we can see kind of the visual appearance of both inside and outside. But actually, when you close your eyes and you feel the body, you don't feel hand, foot, head, heart, lungs. You feel sensations. Now, initially in practice, when we sit down and we may, pay attention to our breath. We may pay attention to the breath at the nostrils or the chest or the abdomen, wherever. Often, we kind of imagine in our mind this part of the body, and we kind of somehow try to connect with that part of the body and experience something, or just notice what we do experience. And initially, our conceptual understanding of the body, that it has this size, this shape, this function, these pieces working in this way, that conceptual map of the body is a very strong conditioning in our mind. We've learned that. And it is deeply imprinted on our life, on our mind, and it's how we experience our body, is mostly through the anatomical map. But gradually, as we develop the strength of mind, we can actually feel what is going on in the body. Now, is that so difficult? Well, let me just ask you to try this little experiment. Just hold your hand up to the side of you, or out in front of you, like this. This is called holding your hand out in front of you. Conceptually, we know it's hand, we know it's arm, and we know it's holding. Those are all concepts. And we know that is what is happening. But let me ask you, what is the experience of holding your hand out in front of you?
Heavy.
Say it again.
Heavy.
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 Vibration. Yes. Anything else?
Pulling.
Gravity. Pulling. Pulling. Okay. There's a pulling sense. Mm-hmm. What else? What?
Warmth.
Okay, warmth. Anything else?
Effort.
Huh? Effort. That's true, there is effort, but let's stay with the physical experience of holding our hand out in front of us.
Tightness.
Tension.
Pulse the weight of my hand.
Wait. Is that heaviness? You feel heaviness. Your hand is a concept. So there's no hand. So there's no hand, there's no arm, there's no holding. There's just heaviness. Right? Heaviness. Okay.
Increasing heaviness.
Not only increasing heaviness, increasing loudness. Anything else?
Coolness.
Coolness. Or did you say cruelness?
Yeah.
Coolness. Okay. Now, if we focus on it, if we pay attention to it, we stay present with it, we see, or we discover, or we know that this experience, heaviness, hardness, aching, oh, nobody said aching, I'm feeling aching. Aching, heaviness, trembling, tingling, what? Okay, you can let your arm down. Which of those experiences is you? It really doesn't make sense, does it? Because we're confusing, or we're conflating the conceptual reality of this is me and this is my arm, and the experiential reality of the primary elements of earth, air, fire, and water. And when we conflate the two, we ask the question from one perspective, expecting an answer from another. Which of these primary elements is the conceptual you? Does not compute, because none of them are, obviously, or all of them are in the aggregate as my arm, but with your eyes closed, there's no arm. There's just aching, heaviness, and so on. Practice for developing insight, liberating insight, has to take place at the primary element level of the body. It cannot. Paying attention to the body at the conceptual level of anatomical structure and anatomical movement and things like that is not sufficient for liberating the mind and for realizing the unconditioned. Not sufficient.
Okay.
not possible. And so it is the instruction of teachers to get you to pay attention to the body at the elemental level. What kinds of sensations are you feeling? Now, we may start with movement and pressure, you know, and just having a sense of expanding and contracting. Well, this is the mode of the body, but we're still not in touch with the elements of the body. So we want to keep refining our attention and the continuity of our attention, because through the continuity of our attention, we will be able to slip through, or kind of penetrate, we say, or kind of slip through, or what's that word? Kind of get through the concept, the conceptual overlay, to the actual experience. Now, this is a challenge. This is a real challenge in practice, because so much of our mental activity is conceptual, and we mostly relate to our body as concept, its appearance, its function, its activity, and its awareness of the elemental level that I said is required, or it's essential for one to realize the unconditioned. Now, there are, as you can see, these other secondary elements: the ear, the eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, which are the receptors of physical experience, form, color, sound, odor, taste. So that when you know, I hold up this thing here in front of you, and I say, "What do you see?" Well, let me do it this way. What do you see? Well, what do you see? Huh? What? Speak up.
Gold.
What else?
Reflection.
What else?
Curve.
Huh?
Curve.
Curve?
Yeah.
Okay, curves. Curves.
Shape.
Light. This is where the Zen master would say, no, what you see is... No. Okay, so... You don't want to get stuck in any one of those perspectives. You know, if the Zen master thinks you're stuck in the conceptual, then, you know, he'll hit you with the stick. And if you're stuck in the, in the experiential, then he'll ring the bell or whatever. So, yeah, that's true. What we see is both a shape, a color, you know, the kind of the shininess. We know its function as a bell. We know its shape, etc. When we put them all together, we have a full picture, a full understanding of this. But it's the form and the color, the shape and the color, which we can perceive directly with the eyes. We can't see a bell. We don't see bell. We see form, you know, shape, and color. Which brings me to the instruction in practice that when you are practicing and when you're walking about and you're trying to pay attention to walking, if in your walking you're noticing leg, foot, ground, bird, tree, etc., what you see, hear, and feel, those are all concepts, not practice. Not practice sufficient to pierce the veil of delusion to reach the unconditioned. But it's where we start. It's where we start in practice, in beginning to notice just, oh, the lifting of the leg, the moving of the leg, the placing of the leg, or the turning of the head, the seeing of the car, the seeing of the bird, the seeing of the person, whatever. And we know it at that level. But in time, as the continuity of mindfulness increases, increasingly we stay in the primary elements of, and we recognize our experience through the primary elements of materiality. So it's just seeing. What you see, not important. It's the function of seeing, and you see the color. Got it. Whether it's a bird, or a car, or a person, a tree, not important. The function of seeing and the function of recognizing color and shape, that's important. So you can see that in order to, as I'm saying, penetrate the veil of delusion with mindfulness, we really have to leave ordinary reality. We leave it. We're in ordinary, we're dealing with ordinary reality, but when the eyes are closed and the mind is paying attention, we slip through that and we're just into experiential reality. We say, these material elements are the experiential elements. I want to point to the fact that some of these material elements are born of karma. Some of these material elements are born of the mind. Some of them are born of heat or environmental conditions, and some of them are born of food. All that we experience in the body, all of the material elements, and the health of the body in general, comes from these four conditions: karma, mind, environment, or heat, and food. It is interesting at times, not in the formal practice of developing your mindfulness, but it's interesting at times to just speculate and to look at the experiences you have in the body and see where they came from. What is conditioning this experience of the body into being? Well, thankfully, they turned on the air conditioning during the break. And the coolness that we feel is due to what? Karma? Mind? Food? Environment. Okay. But, why can you feel it at all in the first place? Well, we have a body. Right? We have a body. Where did you get this body? Karma. Without karma, no body. Right? We got this body at conception, small as it was, at conception, because of karma. And we continue to experience the life of the body because of the momentum of that karma. We'll talk more about karma this afternoon too, but as a material element, we feel what we feel. We have these eyes, we have this body, we have these ears, we have this nose, we have this sense organs due to karma. So this experience of feeling, due to karma. The experience of cold, due to environment. Now it's almost lunch. You may be feeling some, what's that sensation down around the belly? Hunger? What? Where's hunger on here? I don't see hunger on there. What's that feeling? Tightness. Gurgling. Gurgling. Okay. We could take and just name all of our experiences and then try to identify, are they the earth element, the fire element, the water element, or the air element? But generally, let me just say that the earth element is experienced as hardness, what else? Hardness, softness, anything in that continuum. Let me find my notes. The air element is experienced as pressure, vibrating, pulsating, things like that. Fire elements is experienced as cold, hot, heat, lightness. Earth element. Here we go. The spectrum of hardness and softness, hardness, prickly, velvety, lightness, rigidity, gentleness, harshness, tenderness, stinging, floating, and pinpricks. Whew. Okay. So, what is itching?
Earth
element. The air element is some experience along the spectrum of movement or stillness. Experiences stiffness, tension, pushing, pulling, relaxation, bending, stretching, pulsating, vibrating, movement, tightness, releasing, and tautness. Got all that? You can listen to the tape later. The fire element is experienced along the spectrum of heat to cold, warmth, coolness, lightness, gentleness. Sometimes, you know, when you have a fire outside, like a cook fire or a bonfire or something, and you know how the heat rises, anything that gets in its wake gets lifted. Same thing in the body. Sometimes the heat of the body makes the body feel very light. Huh? You notice? No. You pay attention, you'll see. And the water element, generally we say that the water element, we might feel, you know, kind of around the mouth stickiness or some wetness, a kind of heaviness, cohesion. But actually the water element is so subtle that we don't feel it. We actually feel the other elements of it, hardness, heat. We feel the temperature of the water element. We feel the hardness of the water, or the softness of the water element, rather than the water element itself. But nevertheless, if in your reporting to your teacher of your physical experience, you include anything other than what I've just said, you're dwelling in concept. Wow, you know, it really, and my teacher in Burma, Upandita, he insisted, absolutely insisted, that you articulate your experience in terms of the primary elements. Anything that was not on the primary element, I said, he didn't hear. He didn't hear it. Of course, there was a lot of mental stuff to report too, but as far as physical experience, you say, oh, I noted lifting. Well, what? What's lifting? Well, it's kind of like the stretching of the muscle. Muscle? What's that? You know, it's like, well, it's the heaviness. Oh, heaviness. Yeah, okay, I got that. And to try to describe your experience of the breath in terms of just these elements, or describe your walking or stepping in terms of just these elements, well, why bother? I'll tell you why bother. Because it cuts through the illusion that it's you, and it cuts through the illusion that it's your body, and it cuts through the illusion that this body is as it appears visually, or it appears functioning. It's not. It's just momentarily arising, rapidly arising, physical experiences that can be directly experienced, and that's what the guidance for an instruction in practice is. Get to the elemental level or the elemental experience of the body. Hang out there. Don't leave there. In time, as much as possible. In time, then the mind rests there. And you don't put together the concepts of body, size, shape, function, or anything else. Then you have the opportunity to pierce the illusion of delusion. Pierce through delusion to reach the unconditioned. But only when that capacity to kind of live at the elemental level, or to reside at, to be aware of the elemental level, then it's possible.
So your teacher, when you've got pain, what do you have to translate that into something more elemental, like burning,
stinging, stretching, aching, hardness? Yeah.
Okay,
you could
just say pain.
Pain? You can say pain. What? What's that? Can you be more descriptive? Because when we feel pain, you know, it's like, oh, my knee is killing me. My knee is killing me. You know, already we've got a knee and it's mine. And killing. But actually, at that level of knee and pain, that's concept. The knee is a concept. Right? And so, in order to get through that concept of me to the elemental, then, and you may find that if, when you're experiencing pain, you really look at this pain to be able to distinguish its elemental characteristics, Is it hardness pain? Is it stretching pain? Is it heat pain? Is it flickering pain? Oh, there's a description of pain. Oh my goodness. I gotta show you this. This one is pain. Here we go. Pain is actually a quality of the mind. You know, pain is not physical. Did you know that? Pain is not physical. It's mental. But there are different kinds of pain. Should I share with you some? Just some. And in John Kabat-Zinn's stress reduction, stress management training with mindfulness-based stress, you have to decide, you have to indicate which of these kind of pains you have. Flickering, quivering, pulsing, throbbing, beating, pounding, jumping, flashing, shooting, pricking, boring, drilling, stabbing, lancinating, sharp, cutting, lacerating, pinching, pressing, gnawing, cramping, crushing, tugging, pulling, wrenching, hot, burning, scalding, searing, tingling, itching, smarting, stinging, dull, sore, hurting, aching, tender, taut, tender, heavy, taut, rasping, splitting, tiring, exhausting, sickening, suffocating, fearful, frightening, terrifying, punishing, cruel, grueling, vicious, killing, wretched, blinding. And the list goes on. But if you're paying that close attention, it's not just pain. It's like you are there at the momentary flickering arising and passing away of it. And it's that continuity of attention and that sensitivity to the characteristic of it that's required. Now, when you get to that level, it's like the knowing, the mindfulness of it is so strong that the sense of it's me and mine and my knee, not there. That concept doesn't have an opportunity to get in the mind. You're just at that elemental level of being with the body. Yeah.
I mean, I try to get my clients to pass the stories and stuff. But,
some of these are more of the emotional mental thing. This is, as I mentioned, is the list that they use at the stress management thing. These would not be acceptable with Upandita. But just it's a phase that we have to go through though to get from my knee's killing me to pulsing, throbbing heat. You know, it's kind of we go through the phase, the phase of part concept, part experience. You know, until it's more experience and either no or less or no concept. This transition in the progress of insight knowledge, the transition from concept to direct experience, both of the physical elements and of the mental elements. Is very difficult, very difficult. It takes just a persevering, diligent continuity of attention to just what your experience is. Very difficult, and initially it's very destabilizing. When you kind of open up to just the elemental experience of the body and the elemental experience of the mind, without a sense of self kind of holding it all together. Very destabilizing. Yeah.
When your experiences when you're with your teachers in regards to the body, working with the mind and the relationship to the body, do they have to exercise the body or can they work with the mind that in turn does work with the body, works with muscle tissue, works with the cell layer, works with the physiology of the body?
What works with the cell layer, the muscles? And
instead of did you find with your teachers that could they work more with their minds and that in turn also worked with the body and worked with the physiology?
To the extent that I understand your question, there's not a lot of encouragement to be very physical, but by paying attention with your mind to what is going on in the body, you will definitely experience all that you experience in your body when you do heavy exercise, hard workout, or anything else. You'll definitely feel that even more intensely. Burn And I felt my leg burn like a log in a fire. I mean, for long periods of time. It's just flickering heat, just like, oh my God. You know, but when the mindfulness is strong and you're not identified with it as my leg, it's like, wow. You know, every once in a while the image or the concept will kind of crack through and you'll think, my leg, oh Jesus, I gotta get up. You know, it's like, no, no. It's just like, and you settle back down and you just settle back into the...
Yeah. You physically got up to move. Did your leg ever go dead and you felt like you were going to tumble over or anything like that? Or were you able to actually work through that and the body responded to that?
Well, most of the time when you get up or when you shift out of your posture, it takes a little while to kind of come back into ordinary reality and the ordinary relationship to a body with legs. It takes a while, you know. I did have the experience, though, of going to an interview with Sharon Salzberg one time when early in my practice. And I sat down, I was doing my, you know, I was sitting cross-legged in front of her and she was there. I was telling her about my practice and it went on for 20 minutes or so. And at the end of which, I got up and started walking out without checking out if I still had legs and fell right on top of her. Oh, is that what sets it off?
No, when you laugh.
I just can't laugh, huh? So, yeah, it does take some transition back into ordinary reality, both with your mind back into ordinary reality and your body into ordinary reality to kind of put it all back together. And we become more skillful as time goes on in transitioning from ordinary reality to experiential reality and back. But it takes some time. Initially, it can be a little disorienting. Yeah. Yeah.
In this, I know we're talking mostly about the body, but in this, when you're doing that kind of practice and an experience of ego or desire arises, how do you label that in this cosmology?
When ego, desire, aversion, or anything like that arises, those are mental states. Those are mental states. So then we go back to the other side of the page and say, which one of these is arising? Oh, it's aversion, or it's desire, or it's, you know, fear. Fear is a form of aversion, or it's judgment, or something like that. So as I acknowledged, and as you know, the mind and the body are talking to each other all the time. So while you're sitting there, and first your leg goes numb, you know, there's numbness, but it's a leg. And there's, you know, some judgment of that. And there might be a lot of fear, like, oh my God, I don't know, should I move now or later? Or am I ever going to be able to walk again? Or am I hurting myself? You know, and so there's that kind of commenting going on. And if we can recognize those, not just deny them or avoid them, but recognize those and keep moving on in time with awareness, then we slip through, you know, the mind, the legs go numb and you don't care. And it's not hurting the legs either. But then you get to where the legs are on fire. And it feels like they're log burning. And it's just like flickering heat. And it's just like, you know, you don't want to know that it's your leg. You just want to see a nice log in a fire burning. You know, but because when you identify with it as my leg, then you've got a lot of aversion and fear and judgment. It's like, oh my God, you know, and a lot of intention arising to move, get out of here, move. And you have to kind of see that. Wait. Let me just slip through that veil again. Not my leg, not me, burning. It's just, oh, there's burning. Heat, flickering, heat happening.
So what you do is you consciously recognize, like, wow, there's a lot of fear and aversion arising.
Definitely.
And then just sort of, like, make the effort to move back to just log on fire.
Log on fire. I know, because log is also concept. Fire is concept. It's just back to the experiential reality of that. No, I don't move away from the sense of my leg burning. It's like you have to recognize, oh, that's conceptualizing, or when fear arises, to experience it anymore, you have to deal with the fear. Now you got to deal with the fear, or the aversion, or the intention to move arises. I want to get up. You know, or you want to look at the clock and say, how much longer is this sitting supposed to go? Oh my God. You know, and so in noticing those mental eruptions, then you sustain the continuity, and the continuity of the awareness gets stronger and stronger and stronger. In time, nothing moves. In time, nothing moves you off your seat. Yeah. No amount of unpleasantness, physical, or drama in the mind, mental, emotional in the mind, doesn't move you. Yeah. But it's a process of learning how to endure the actual experience of our body. Why do we keep moving? Why do we keep moving all the time? Why are we so restless in our body? Because if we sit still, this is what we'll discover. We say in the text that constantly moving the body obscures the truth of dukkha. You want to understand the truth of dukkha? Sit still, pay attention. Sit absolutely still and pay attention. You'll discover it really quick. If you don't, then you'll keep moving. We keep moving in part because the truth of dukkha is so hard to get. It's so hard to get. And so we keep moving.
But you just said once you reach a certain point, which is far beyond my capabilities...
No. Let me just correct you. It's not far beyond your capability. Maybe it's far beyond what you are currently experiencing. But you certainly have the capability. I say you. The mind, if developed, has the capability.
Okay.
Your mind is no less than my mind or anyone else's mind. Yeah.
Thank you for that. You said, I believe, that once you reach the point where nothing can move you. Yes?
Yeah.
But you got up sometime.
Mm-hmm.
How do you know when to get up? I'm just curious.
Yeah, how do you know when to get up? When you're at the point where that's a good question. That's a question that your teacher is probably going to ask you. When you get to that point, why'd you get up? Because usually there is an experience that's unnoted or unnoticed that conditions an impulse or to get up or an intention to get up, and you get up before you recognize what it was that condition that intention. There is a place in Burma. There's one monastery in Burma. I did not go there. I didn't find out about it and wasn't able to go there because they didn't allow foreigners to go there at the time. Where their goal in your practice is to get you to sit for 24 hours, to stand for 24 hours, to walk for 24 hours, and to lie down fully aware for 24 hours. That's their goal.
No break.
24 hours straight.
For the 4 days?
No. Just one day at a time. You know, and that's their. When you go there, that's what they're going to be asking you to do. Gradually, you just build up from an hour to an hour and a half to 2 to 3 to 4 to 5 to 10 to 12 to 15 20 24. You can do it, and it doesn't hurt the body. I mean, the body hurts, but it doesn't damage the body. Powerful healing takes place there. Powerful, unbelievable healing takes place there. So it's not personal to you. It's not personal. It's not, I can do it, I can't do it, you can do it, he can't do it. It's the mind. If the mind is developed, it can happen. Now we all have our minds. We all come with our minds, and our minds have some degree of wisdom and some degree of delusion and some degree of determination and some degree of wimpiness and some degree of all those other things. But as we pay attention, and this is our responsibility. The whole practice is pay attention to your own experience. What's your mind doing? What's your body doing? Then we can see. Then we'll develop. I used to be a wimp. I was like, sit, you've got to be kidding. I hate pain. I don't want anything to do with it. So when I got to Burma and my teacher was, you know, I saw the schedule, sit an hour, walk an hour, sit an hour, walk an hour, you know, 16 hours a day. Oh, okay. If sitting an hour is good, sitting an hour and a half must be better, right? Wouldn't you think? If you can sit for an hour, that's good. But sit for an hour and a half. So I said, okay, I'll sit for an hour and a half. Then I sit for 2 hours and 2.5, 3 hours, 3.5, 4 hours, 4.5. Just kept sitting. But as I was kept sitting longer and longer, oh my God, it's really painful, excruciating. So I go to my teacher, and every day I was reporting, oh, this pain in excruciating detail, just the most refined, flickering pain, just like, you know, stabbing flames just kind of going right in this. You know, which cell is right on fire? You know, it's like knee, not no knee, it's just like, you know, And then after a couple of weeks of that, he says, you know why you have so much pain? I said, no, why? He said, you sit too long. So, the goal is not to just sit too long and endure a lot of pain. The goal is to reach balanced mind, really. Some people ask you to do that by sitting long. Some people don't. Yeah.
Maybe this is a conceptual thing, but realizing or being aware of the elemental aspects of like fire and burning, etc.
Yeah.
Is there a place for like distance, close, far away from center, or something like that? Like the case of this book versus the fire.
Yeah. Yeah. So the question is there in the experiencing of elements, the elemental nature of the body, is there a place for distance and closeness or far or things like that? That would be conceptual. It would be conceptual. But we do experience at times feeling like, oh, we're right in the middle of it, or it feels a little remote, or it feels distant, or it feels like even disconnected from us, but somehow we're still feeling it. And it's interesting to take note of that, and you can always report that. Some teachers will accept it, some won't. Yeah, it's just an experience. Yeah.
Well, I'm just wondering, fear is a concept in and of itself as well. Like a lot of what you listed here as mental factors seem like concepts, and yeah. Is there a way to break them down in the same way that you can break your physical feelings down into elements?
Mm.
Like to examine what the elements of fear are?
Yes, good. Sure. You know, to take fear as an example, fear is a form of aversion. But when fear arises, you know, it conditions certain physical experience, doesn't it? Fear, contraction of the gut, clenching of the jaw, kind of a fight, flight kind of reaction, and you get that kind of stuff going on physically. But fear itself is a mental element. It's aversion. You know, there's something happening and you're, you know, but that's the mind doing that. The body is kind of is acting it out, but it's the mind that's afraid. Body not afraid, mind's afraid. But the mind that's afraid conditions the body into a fearful feeling. What's familiar to us is fearful feeling. Yeah. So there's, you know, these mental states the mental factors that I put out, there's a lot of, you know, like to take aversion, for example, the unwholesome aversion. There's just many different kinds of aversion, fear being one of them, cynicism being a form of aversion, anger, hatred, impatience even, all forms of aversion, from subtle to very gross, rage, a depression, a despair. These are all forms of aversion. And when you experience any of them, you might initially identify it as depression or despair or whatever. And then you go into it as, you know, there's a whole package of mental as well as physical pixels of experience in that experience of frustration or, you know, disappointment, something like that.
How do you get beyond the pixel level?
Yeah, well, the pixelated view of life, you just keep paying attention. As you keep paying attention, you will get through the concepts, more and more concepts, into more and more direct experience of the pixels of phenomena. And I'll tell you why later this afternoon, why it's so important to do that. Was there another? Somebody else had a question.
Yeah, it ties into that question. Maybe it's a question in a turn. So if you note a particular emotion, and then you go, because it seems to me like once I've noted an emotion, that either I can deal with the story feeling that emotion, or I can go to the body sensations. And then it's sometimes hard to know, well, if I go to the body sensations too quickly, or if I encourage someone else to do that, is that then sort of denying the emotion, you know, rather than just being willing to have the courage to be with that emotion?
So the comment is about when there's an emotional eruption in the mind, how to work with it, and what is actually going on there. When there's an emotional eruption in the mind, there's a lot going on. There is, as you say, there's the story of the emotional stuff. There is the actual mental state of that emotion. there is the physical experiences conditioned by that emotion. There's all kinds of future planning around, you know, getting revenge or what you're going to do to get out of it, to get rid of it, to in the future differently. There's a whole package of phenomena going on in what we call, you know, an emotional state. We can take note of any or all of those elements of it, some of which are concepts and have more elements that they're made up of just more elements. To consistently choose to turn away from the mental state of fear to the experience of physical fear, you're right, it's avoiding and it's not really getting skillful at recognizing the mental states and how to be with the mental state itself. But sometimes when they're overwhelming, particularly when they're overwhelming, we say, oh, go to the body, feel it in the body. Because as soon as you start feeling the body and you start naming the sensations that you feel, you know, it moderates that, you know, it modulates, it kind of insulates you from feeling quite so barraged by or kind of inflamed by that state of mind. But in time, we do have to recognize the states of mind and learn how to be with, you know, the feeling of fear, how to be with the feeling of any other anger, jealousy, rage. But
so I don't quite understand. I understand the going into the physical sensation and how affecting focus and trying to not. What I don't understand is the difference between being in the mental state and being with the story. Because it always feels yeah. that the story just spins you out and actually is not the story.
I know.
So
yeah. Yeah, so the comment is she understands the going to the body, but she, when she stays with the mental phenomena that's going on in an emotional state, well, I kind of hear you saying all you recognize is the story and not the mental state itself. The mental state is the feeling, the mental feeling. Mental feelings are very hard to recognize, very difficult to perceive clearly. Physical feelings, we can learn to do that. The mental stories, we can learn to do that. We can even name it, but to actually allow ourselves to feel, you know, jealousy without a story, really painful. Really painful. Yeah, that's why I was talking to Wynn about, you know, that's really where we want to be. I mean, not where we want to be, but when you get a chance to really feel an emotion, man, don't give it up. Don't pass up that feeling. Don't pass up that opportunity.
I'm a little bit stuck, you know, when you talk about concepts as a veil of delusion or
yeah.
whatever, but when we're so dependent on concepts for our survival,
yes.
you know, a surgeon needs
sure.
to have a concept of
sure.
body
oh, yeah.
systems
and
our life. You
yeah.
know, depends on this concept.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
so when they have that kind of power and then to describe them as deluded, it's confusing.
Yeah.
Different levels of
yeah.
reality.
Sure. There are these different realities or different levels of reality, different perspectives, I would say, of reality. There is the conceptual, consensual, ordinary reality, and the Buddha spoke extensively about living and working in this reality and not denying it, dismissing it, not trying to get away from it, but learning to live skillfully in this with the use of concepts. Why I'm speaking about the experiential reality beyond concepts through the piercing the veil of delusion is because that's where freedom takes place. That's where liberation takes place. Concepts are very nature entangling, you know, because it's a holding of something in the mind. It's a holding of a concept in the mind. You know, right now we're all holding this concept that there's a day-long seminar going on in Minneapolis with Steve Armstrong teaching something about mind and health, and I'm a student or I'm a teacher, and this is what's going on here, right? Well, yes, it is. Yes, it is at that level. And it's important to know that and to acknowledge that. But it's important also to be able to see through that illusion when necessary or useful. Now, in this particular case, you know, is it ever useful to kind of escape that illusion? Yeah, It is if you're hungry and you want to eat, then you want to know that. Oh, okay. So you kind of get out of that reality into, oh, my experiential reality is, you know, I'm getting dehydrated and I need to drink some water or whatever. Yeah.
Because of the interplay of the mind, the mental state, and the physical, like even when there's a, you're aware of the filter of the coloring, whether it's greed or delusion,
sure,
or it's some emotional state,
yeah,
there are corresponding physical,
yes,
sensations.
Definitely.
And if you actually use any kind of noting or naming, then you are using concept by going, okay, this
sure,
there's a coloring of,
there's
a thought, whatever emotion, sense, and yeah, it feels like this.
Yeah.
So it seems to me that that's such an interactive play. I don't know if I've directly experienced, you know, other than noticing some kind of a coloring,
sure,
quality without there also being awareness.
A story.
Physical.
No, yeah. No, 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 yeah. No, no.